Blog Talk Radio.
Peace to the ancestors. Yes. Peace to Dr. Cornell West. Yes. Peace to the movement. Yes. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind, and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slang. Now we locked up a game. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your forms. Black nannies carrying white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? It never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I wanna get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up.
Couple of quirks, can't call it pancakes, cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the rodents still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, raising dough. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland Security, now there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres. Take these 40 ounces. We ain't gon' get on the levees. Revolution televised early. Is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Forced to climb and shit and have your back, have you beat and lost your mind, especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got porn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign, SWAT team, crack fiends, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You get bored and you forced to grind. If you fall then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. This phone call cost a dime. What it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent brothers not only dealing with the same drug selling. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same drug heritage.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
You know the black freedom movement, constitution, moral conscience. You know we've been trying to redeem the soul of the nation. Even as that nation been trying to render us soulless, so we're our soulful people, the blues people. We've been keeping alive the blood stained banner of democracy. Thank God for those who came before. We shall never forget them and always move forward with grace and dignity.
America, why you wanna treat me so cold? America,
welcome, 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 America, to another exciting episode of Dr. Mary Lee Live. Dr. Lee started this project about 3 years ago. She provides us a forum to discuss the contemporary topics of our day, the things affecting us as a black community and as a country as a whole. Dr. Lee has her co-host joining her today, which is Dr. Cannon, father of entertainer Nick Cannon, and president of the Nick Cannon Foundation. Dr. Cannon is a spiritual leader and an activist for community and equality for the black community. He has been working diligently over the course of years and on to new projects currently, such as Legal Shield, which is an app designed to help individuals seek legal help when they need it. Dr. Lee is also joined by another co-host, Trace McMillan, who has just returned to us from graduating from college. Congratulations, Trace. Glad to have you back. Trace McMillan is a young man who comes to the show with a different perspective, a perspective more in line with the youth of today, to speak to the issues and things from a youth perspective. We're grateful to have him with us. And to the usual panel of doctors that Dr. Lee usually has with us, Dr. Anita Moncrief, a doctor of internal medicine specializing in children's medicine, and Dr. Curtis Long, a psychiatrist who specializes in youth treatment, particularly at-risk youth. Tonight, we'll be going to Trace McMillan first, then to Dr. Cannon whenever he arrives, and then to your host who needs no introduction, but she'll get one anyway, Dr. Mary Lee. Now over to Trace McMillan.
Hey, everybody. Trace speaking. I appreciate the introduction. I'm here live. As stated, I'm a recent grad from Indiana State University, obtaining my communication degrees and journalism and also multimedia studies. And so, yes, today we have a very special conversation on the horizon. Tonight's topic, Night of the Girl Child. And so we're going to dive into that along with our as stated special guest, Regina Hall. But without any further ado, I'll pass it on to Dr. Cannon, who then will introduce the wonderful Dr. Mary. Thank you. God bless.
Ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you so very much. I know I do for a whole lot of reasons, because we know that you could be many, many other places on a Wednesday evening, but you've chosen to take the time to spend your time with us. And, you know, it's our hopes, ladies and gentlemen, as always, to bring you some great stimulating conversation that, you know, you'll be able to dive into with us. That means hit one on your phone if you want to speak, if you want to get into this conversation. As usual, we're going to lay a platform for you. Then we're going to open up the lines. And so you have to hit one on your phone to get in this conversation. We definitely want you to get in this conversation. You know, for the last 2 years, we've been talking about the power of us as a people, 400 years of greatness, 400 years of entrepreneurship, 400 years of due process, 400 years of Afro-American people being in America and shining. We are a great people. And so as usual, we started a few months ago talking about something's broken and we couldn't get it fixed, and we had some great conversation. And we brought in our young people. And again tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we want to bring in our young people in this conversation. So if you know some young folk, hit one, call them, and let them get in this conversation as well. We want to talk about the night of the girl child. And it's going to be an interesting conversation, because when you think about the subject, the night of the girl child, I don't know what comes to your mind, ladies and gentlemen, but I know it's a whole lot of things that takes place in this country to young ladies, to young girls, the beauty of watching a young girl go from a young girl to a tomboy to a woman, that there's a young child inside of you, and there's a lady that protects that child, and there's a woman that protects that lady. And so without any further ado, to open up this conversation to bring us real clarity, I shared with you my thoughts on the night of the girl child, but I want us to get into this subject. So I'm going to bring our illustrious host that does such an outstanding week after week, who bringing us together in conversation, to take the helm of this conversation, Dr. Mary Lee. I just want to say I appreciate you so much for staying faithful on the task, for keeping this show going week after week, bringing great conversation like this. I say we love you. We appreciate you, Dr. Lee, as you come to the microphone tonight.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I certainly appreciate you all, and I thank you, Dr. Cannon. I always say when I talk to anyone about this show, I said, James Cannon, he just pushed me out here, y'all. And he did. I was a guest, actually, on a show that Dr. Cannon was hosting, a very, very interesting show, great show. And for 1 week, and then he invited me back the next week and gave me the mic. I could not believe it. I said, and he said, oh, this is your show. This is you tonight. I'm like, me doing what? So it was just that is exactly the way it happened. And all I can say is thank you, thank you, thank you. I've always enjoyed, you know, sharing and enjoyed and always kind of, you know, I did a few classes in broadcasting with the Columbia School of Broadcasting. That's been a lot of years ago. Didn't complete it, but I was doing great while I was in that course. And so I'm enjoying this. I really, really do thank you, and I appreciate all of you. I love you all so much. Love you, James, and appreciate, you know, everyone. You know, each week, every week, you know, you all are here. You're participating, and I appreciate it. Without you, there is no show. But we have a great show tonight. I'm so excited. I'm just really excited about Ms. Regina Hall joining us tonight. I'm going to tell you just a little bit about her. She's an author. She's an international speaker, a trainer, coach, CEO, founder of Exhale Enlightened Heart Services, LLC. She's also, I believe I read somewhere, certified by the Maxwell Institute as a speaker, and just does phenomenal work throughout the world. And I'm excited about learning about the Night of the Girl Child. And actually, I had not heard about this until we met. And so I'm grateful for you being here. And we had a little discussion earlier, and so we're going to bring you right onto the platform. I want to thank doctors for being here with us tonight, Dr. Tynes, Dr. Montreese, Dr. Longs, and appreciate you all. We're going to have a great talk tonight. And so welcome.
Oh, thank you.
We're going to turn it over to you right now.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lee, and thank you for this opportunity. And I just want to give a special shout-out to Francesca Sparkle for introducing us. And it was wonderful speaking with you on yesterday. And so I'm very appreciative of this opportunity, and how exciting to talk about the Night of the Girl Child. And it's not a wonder that you hadn't heard about it, because as I talk to people and ask them, have they ever heard of the International Day of the Girl Child? Often people tell me no. And I was in the same boat. I had an opportunity to speak on Les Brown. He had a platform this was in 2021, for International Day of Women, which is in March, and I believe March 6th. And he had a panel of us women coming together and speaking from all over, and I was a part of that. And as I was really doing some research, that's how I came across the International Day of the Girl Child. And I had never heard of it, and it really caught my eye and attention. And I started researching about that. And what I found out, that the mission was actually developed in December 19th of 2011 by the National United Nations General Assembly, and they adopted a resolution, and the resolution is 66/170, to declare October 11 as the International Day of the Girl Child. And this was to recognize girls' rights and the unique challenges that girls face around the world. And so this has been in operation since 2011, and the International Day of the Girl Child focuses attention on the need to address the challenges girls face and to promote girls' empowerment and the fulfillment of their human rights. And they really want to make sure that girls are brought to the table as well. And so to hear that youth are on the line, and they do, and they are invited to the table, is so important, because oftentimes we are talking about youth and we are talking about girls, but they're not invited to the table. And here with United Nations of Women, they invite the girls to the table all over the world. And the unique challenges that girls face throughout the world. And there are unique challenges everywhere, and even with poverty. Everywhere. So it really caught my attention. I have an organization called Sisters Journeying Together, and it was birthed from my book, Mommy, I Need You. And my book is about the sexual abuse I suffered at the hands of a next-door neighbor. And the healing power I experienced is mission, Sisters Journeying Together, is to assist girls in finding their voices and healing from distorted thinking, low self-esteem, and negative images. It is to provide a safe place for personal growth and leadership, empowering girls to grow and to understand that they matter. And so I felt like the International Day of the Girl Child really tied in with Sisters Journeying Together. And so I have now formed a group of women, a planning committee for us to do this. This is our first time doing it in 2011. And the theme for the International Day of the Girl Child is Empowered Girls Grow Up to Be Empowered Women. And because it's our first year, we have decided to really take on 20 organizations, schools, and after-school programs to participate in the event. And we're going to also be doing this by blasting on social media on October the 11th, posting our thoughts, encouraging girls between the ages of 12 and 19. But because it is the Day of the Girl Child, we are inviting all girls to the platform. And you can become a reader, or your organization could do affirmations. There are workshops that we can also provide. And I'm really excited about us really making sure that we are connecting with girls on that day. And, you know, and hopefully this will start every day that girls are feeling special and that they matter. And what really, again, brought it about for me is my experience. And unfortunately, my experience was that my mom didn't believe me, and eventually my dad found out, and he didn't believe me. And so there was a lot of self-esteem issues that I had. I had a lot of self-esteem issues. I didn't have the right self-image about myself. I had a lot of distorted thinking. I had believed in a lot of lies. And because my trade is counseling, I'm forever encountering women, and it don't matter what platform they're on. It don't matter. I mean, whether they are entrepreneurs, or whether they are corporate women, or professional women, or women who are dealing with blue collar, who are in blue collar, or moms, or whatever. I run into women, period, who struggle with having a positive image about themselves. So, you know, that's what I have to say about it.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And this here aligns right along with our discussions we've been having over the past, you know, we had 10 episodes of Something Inside of Me got broken, and no matter how hard I try, I cannot fix it. Now, what I'd like to ask you on this topic, I mean, do you certainly, there was a lot of brokenness. Do you feel that that you're fixing it, or is it fixed, or we still have a long way to go?
No, so for me, the journey started for me in my 30s and of really me crying out to God and asking God to heal me, because I no longer wanted to live in the state that I was in. And I stayed before the Lord, crying out to him, and it was like eventually he removed this huge Band-Aid that was covering everything. And once that Band-Aid was snatched off, literally snatched off, I was so unstable. But God began to open up doors of where I met a counselor and at a church, and she began to counsel me. And then from there, I literally began to read the word and just eat it up, literally, day in and day out. I was praying, and I began to see God's word eventually work in my life. And this is from a spiritual perspective, and I understand that this may be controversial for some, but for me, this was my breath. Me pouring myself into the Word of God and allowing it to build me. And so it began to build me, and God began to show me and my healing process, and with the help of other things that he exposed me to. Like, there were women programs that were going on that I availed myself to. I wanted out of the situation I was in, and I was willing to do the work. And so for me, a lot of healing has happened for me. I was dealing with suicidal ideation. I just wanted God to just take me out of what I was in. And I felt like I was nothing but a liar because I wasn't believed. So all these things that I was dealing with. The healing process for me of really seeking and being before the Lord was at least a year, but I journeyed for at least 10 years of that, and just availing myself and keeping myself in God's word and in Bible studies and different things of that nature. And I grew and I grew and I continued to grow. But so what I can say is that every now and then there is some tweaking that has to go on, that I really believe that that those things can come back, but they can never do what they did to me before, and they can never send me where it used to send me ever again. And so that's what I think about a healing process. That you can have thoughts to come back, but I don't have to believe them. You can have things come back in your spirit, but you don't have to wrestle with it like you used to. And so that's where I am in it. And so I do believe that we are growing daily if we allow ourselves to stay in growth. And I do believe that healing is always possible. And because I believe also that if you can change your thinking, you can change your life. I believe that wholeheartedly.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. I want to thank you for your book. I want to thank you for sharing, and thank you for where you are. I'm certain that this has not been, an easy task, and that you're continuing to heal. So I just want to say thank you. I want to say thank you, and I haven't seen the book, but I will be getting that. I will be adding your book to my library.
Well, thank you.
And I will read it. I read everything. I read everything. So I would definitely add it and read it. And so we're going to move on to our
Dr. Lee, before we move on, can I just say a shout out to Dr. Long? I used to work with Dr. Long. I don't know if he's on, but I'm just absolutely thrilled to be online with Dr. Long and so excited to be on this platform with him.
And thank you. And we're going to have Dr. Long, Dr. Montrese, Dr. Tynes. I don't know whether Dr. Tynes is here yet or not, but I would like, you know, for you to have some comments, and then we're going to come back to Dr. Cannon. No, I think before we go to Dr. Cannon, I think I'd like to hear from Trace. You know, Trace is our young co-host and fresh out of college and has been, you know, helping to really raising his family, his siblings, since the loss of his mom. And so I kind of would like to hear from Trace after the doctor.
Real quickly, though, Dr. Lee, can I just ask a question to the guests real quickly?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
We appreciate you so very much, your book. We're also going to get it. I want to get that as well, you know, as we work with young people across the country. You know, radio shows like this is powerful when we can pull young people together, produce shows with them, hear their voices. But when you need, you mentioned that you found a mentor, somebody in your life. I'm just curious, what does a young girl do? I mean, how do she select someone to trust again through the situation when she went to a parent or she went to those that are close and they don't believe her? You know, I know you have an outstanding program. I want to know more about the program in the book. But just as a I'm just asking, when a parent is dealing, when a young person is dealing with their parents don't believe them, something has happened and they need to talk with somebody. They can talk to God, yes. And I know there's a lot of powerful groups that they can go get in the church. But when they need a church, I think you mentioned there was an individual. So how does a young person gauge who to trust and who to talk to when they find themselves in a situation when they think they have nobody to talk to? Everybody around them is not believing them or not listening. Is there any suggestions on how to seek out the right person or a mentor that can help a young person?
Yeah, so, you know, that's an excellent question. For me, honestly, that was not an easy road to find because, one, you dealing with a lot of distortion. You may feel like people are like I had, didn't believe me. You may feel attacked. You can be easily vulnerable and sensitive. And unfortunately, there can be a lot of pain in the church. And what I'm most grateful about is that that I was truly led by God, because I did run up on people who I tried to seek help from who end up trying to take advantage of me. And I even write about that in my book, how I sought a pastor out and how he tried to take advantage of me. So when you are vulnerable like that, you can easily run up on people who do not have your best interests at heart. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to establish my organization to give girls a safe place. And there are places that are out there. And I wish I can tell you that teachers can be a source, because they can. I did have a teacher in my life, but not all of them. So it is tricky. But what I will say is that people are out there, and you might have to do it by trial and error. But it was not easy to find people who had my best interest at heart. It was not. to share or to find my healing. So the best advice that I could give is that you have to be able to tell your story, and if you sense that the person can have your best interest at heart by their program, they're not trying to violate you or touch you in ways that you should not be touched, and say things to you that they should not be saying. And I think now there's more information that's out there, then you can look to them as a safe place. But once they cross that boundary, and you know, you can sense, even if you feel like you don't matter and it's hard for you to run, you can run away from that individual. But that is a great question.
Thank you.
Can you guys hear me?
Thank you. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, this is Trey speaking. I just want to give a special special thanks to the guest speaker, Mrs. Regina, and also those listening. This is a very, very powerful, very powerful moment and a very powerful conversation. Why? Because it's prevalent to everybody. And after listening and taking in all the wise perspectives, I think the number one thing that we can't take away, because it's a very touchy topic, is protection has to be a priority. Protection has to be a priority. It also, with parenting, you could say the first thing starts with parenting. It's kind of difficult, mm-hmm. but at the same time, you have to, us as parents, we have to be, well, I'm not a parent yet. Through the grace of God, hopefully one day I do become a parent. But as a parent, we have to prioritize activity, not being passive. So we have to be active. We have to be able to set an atmosphere. The first step is to set an atmosphere. Set an atmosphere for our ladies, for our young boys. Set an atmosphere that's comfortable, not for the child and others, but for you and the child specifically. So even if you have two kids, three kids, four kids, have an individual atmosphere for each child, so that even when you look into that child's eyes, you could see the fear in them, or you could be able to identify what silent battles that they're going through. That's from like the parental standpoint. Another thing is the child has to understand and prioritize its own atmosphere outside of you. So the child has to understand this is a safe atmosphere that I get from my father or from my mother or from my aunt, that trusted source that they can rely and depend on. Then they have to find that within and for themselves. Why? So they know who they can speak to, and they can create an atmosphere where they're free and able to express anything that's hidden. And so it all starts down to prioritizing protection. We literally have to be active parents, even if we know our kids not in, because kids, a lot of times kids don't be in the right. There's disobedience, there's different things, but I'm not even going to dive into all that. It strictly comes down to even on, no matter what terms you guys are on, good terms, bad terms, we're not that close, nothing should go towards that nucleus atmosphere that was set. So that child has to realize that no matter what I do, no matter how stupid I think I did, no matter how mad I think daddy's going to be, I know that I could go to dad no matter what, 365, and they should be able to be comfortable enough to go to you unconditionally, no matter what. And so that's why I feel like one of the first things that I have to say is that it definitely starts with the parent. And then it takes a village, though. You can't put it all. It takes a village, though. Everybody plays a significant role. Your aunts, your uncles, your peers. Everybody has their own atmosphere and vibration that they thrive in that helps them cultivate who they are. And so these things is what children take in. And there are people that take advantage of children, especially young girls, especially young girls. So what we have to do is we have to, from an adolescent age, we have to program and train our young ladies to be able to identify atmospheres and identify safe spots and know where home is at, so that if anything were to take them outside of their element, they know exactly what precautionary actions to take.
Yes, and that's what happened. That could only really happen with, and you know, with the parents, by hands of the parents and the adults, you know, in our children's lives, to you know, to communicate the safe places, the safe spaces, the you know, up areas and that sort of thing. And so, and with the parents or those in authority, teaching the children, teaching the child, and then that child then can have that, you know, build that confidence and that trust and be able to go to that parent, I believe. You know, I'm thinking of right now of a number of situations that, you know, I became aware of during, you know, my years growing up as a young girl and teenager. And situations where I think where I've seen the girl actually be blamed,
correct.
And I think we, yeah, so where the girl would actually be blamed as if it was something that she had done.
Correct.
I think this conversation is very, you know, worthy, you know, to be discussed, and. So I would like to.
If I can say something to what Trey said, if you don't mind, this is Regina. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
So, yeah, I totally agree with Trace and his perspective. What I would like to say to that, though, 1 in 5 girls before the age of 17 report that they have experienced sexual abuse. 1 in 8. Reported that they were exposed by the age of 10. So you deal with those numbers of what's been reported, and you think about what hasn't been reported, okay, because these are people who are coming forth. I'm not included in that number, but that is what they have found based on what has come forth. And so... So you have a parent who, what you just said, Dr. Lee, who was blamed for her own sexual abuse. And then she has a daughter. No one showed her how to deal with it. And no one, and she hasn't dealt with it properly. And now she doesn't even deal with her daughter properly because she hasn't. She hasn't dealt with that wound in her life because, unfortunately, that can be something that this woman is living with and don't know how to deal with it maybe even expose her own daughter to what she's been exposed to. So I had someone to tell me that her mother set her up to sleep with a man. Now, so come on out. So, you know, we have to understand that there's a lot of pain and distortion in this as well. And there are women who are doing well, who have healed. But I'm just saying you want to be able to look to that parent. But there are parents that are out there hurting who have not dealt with the situation.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. We're going to move on to, I do see some hands that have gone up, and we're definitely will be getting around to you. We want to hear from Dr. Mycrease and Dr. Long, and then we're going to go to some of our hands that are raised. Dr. Mycrease, welcome, and thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Merrily, and thank you, Ms. Hall, for your openness and for the work that you're doing. When the show, I'm Dr. Anita Moncrease, and my background is in internal medicine and pediatrics. And when the show opened and you mentioned Night of the Girl Child, first thing I did was Google it, and I couldn't find the book. I Googled the International Day of International Day of the Girl, and the topics, the reading talked more about, you know, the technological advances that are going on, and how do we get you know, our young girls involved in the race so that they are competitive. And the whole issue that we're talking about now may have been brushed upon, but not anything like what we're talking about. The night of the girl child, I am just taken back by it. We teach our we talked last week in depth about teaching our young men what to do when the police pull them over, how to act so that they can make it home in the evening. Okay, I remember as a child, my mother talking to me. I had three brothers and one baby sister, but I can remember before my sister was born, my mother talking to me as she gave me every night. She would ask me, has anybody messed with you? Has anybody touched you? If somebody does, you tell me right away. Okay? It was almost like she was telling me, you know, if anybody ever, here's your safe place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I think one thing that we don't do is we encourage our children, like my mother did, to be a tattletale. If somebody touches you, if somebody says something to you, if somebody makes you feel uncomfortable, to tell it, okay? Not to keep it in secret. But we have to be trained like that, like we're training our young men what to do when the police stop. And then we also have to, unfortunately, train our young women and our young men, our boys and our girls, what to do when something does happen, okay? If this person, again, it was my mother in my life, but it doesn't have to be a mother. It could be an aunt. It could be a father. It could be a brother. But somebody who always is there and saying that I am your safe place, okay? When something happens, you do have that comfort zone. And unfortunately, what Ms. Hall was saying is true. When something does happen and the child steps forward, a lot of times nobody believes them. And that's the reason why there's laws out there that dictate that if somebody comes to me as a pediatrician, a child, doesn't matter how old the child is, and they're able to articulate that somebody has touched them inappropriately, by law, I have to report it. It's none of that, you know, maybe the child is misinterpreting it. I don't have to worry about that. By law, I have to report it. And I think that those kind of laws, I think, are very, very, very good because those are the things that help protect the child when the child discloses at home and nobody believes them and they come to the doctor or they go to the school and they report it to an adult. By law, we have to act on it, okay? So I can't wait to get deeper into it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Moncrief. Do you want to respond, Ms. Regina?
No, yes. Well, thank you, Dr. Moncrief. And what I can say is that it's great when you have mandated reporters around and they will speak up and provide that voice. And so the name of my book is Mommy, I Need You. That's the name of the book. The International Day of the Girl Child was really established by the United Nations. And the whole purpose was around the rights of girls and helping to recognize the empowerment of and investing in girls, which are critical for economic investment. And so that year that you're talking about, that year, they did focus on technology in 2021. That's what they promoted. That was the theme because during the pandemic, a lot of young ladies girls did not have access to internet. As a matter of fact, in a lot of urban cities, even here I'm in Michigan, in Detroit, all children did not have access to internet when the pandemic happened. And so companies started donating computers and for children to have, you know, be able to study from home during the pandemic. But all, everybody around the world did not have that access, particularly when you think about those impoverished areas. And that was one of the focus. And so when I decided to that I wanted to be a part of the International Day of the Girl Child because it aligned with Sisters Journeying Together, it was really to still build up their self-image and self-esteem as well as to help them to find their voices. And so that is the thing that I'm striving to do with spreading the word about International Day of the Girl Child.
Thank you. So your title, your book is Mommy.
Mommy, I Need You.
Mommy,
yeah.
I Need You.
Yep. It's titled Mommy, I Need You, No More Stain.
No More Stain.
Yeah, because I named it Mommy, I Need You, No More Stain. Is because when I walked in the house, I had a stain on my dress when the perpetrator did what he had done to me. And my mom asked me what was on my dress. And only thing that I can say was the person name, because at the time I really didn't know what was on my dress. I was too young to understand what was on my dress. And my cousin and her were cooking in the kitchen. And when I said the perpetrator's name, my cousin said to my mom that she didn't believe it. And then my mom said, neither do I, basically, and told me to run upstairs and change my clothes, to go and change my clothes. And when I got older, I began to understand what that stain meant. And I talk about it in my book, that if my mom... It's my mom, because I can't really even blame my cousin. If my mom had really dealt with the fact that my cousin said, Essie, I don't believe that, both of them knew what the stain had the possibility to be. I didn't have any idea. And so I say no more stains because of the healing power of God, that he took that stain away. But that's what started that whole... not believing me is the stain on my dress, because my mom noticed that there was a stain.
Oh, sure. Thank you. Okay. Okay. Was it Dr. Cannon? You want to? Okay.
I'm good.
Whoever started to speak, go ahead.
Hi. Is this Dr. Long?
Yes.
Hi, Dr. Long.
Hi. I want to give a fantastic shout-out to Ms. Regina Hall, who I worked with going back to our days at one of the few hospitals in Detroit, particularly for mental health, BCA Stonecrest, where we have a lot of other colleagues, including Dr. Harris. But not only that, but I have to give her a shout-out for being an alumnus from the great Martin Luther King High School in the city of Detroit. So fantastic work. As you were talking, you know, I'm just writing notes because we have this other show tomorrow. And, you know, the title of your book, particularly what you just mentioned in terms of No More Stains and Mommy, I Need You, it had me thinking about some of the things that I hope I'm attempting to make some sort of a dent in, but yesterday I happened to service this young girl who actually was adjudicated downtown in the Wayne County Juvenile Detention Facility. This young lady at age 13 became pregnant, and she actually spent her time in adjudication while pregnant, delivered the baby, going through a situation now where she's trying to gain custody of the child. She's only 16 at this point. So after she was discharged from the detention facility, and I'm going to make this sort of a statement where a lot of people may be dismayed, but when kids are in the juvenile detention facility, they get everything. terms of medications, treatments, et cetera. The unfortunate part is, based on how things work in Wayne County in the state of Michigan, once they're discharged, there is no guarantee they're going to continue any form of treatment, including medication. So this young lady has been discharged for close to 6 weeks. We still keep in contact with her, so I decided to take her to my office yesterday because we have a nonprofit. And pretty much everything that Ms. Hall has mentioned tonight really is part of this young girl's walk as she's trying to move on, including the whole narrative in terms of her mother not believing in her when a family member had sexually assaulted her and a friend of the family who's in his mid-30s impregnated her. But it was this whole disbelief. And so I started thinking in terms of, you know, our themes dating, you know, years now in terms of what we're trying to do with Dr. Lee's show in terms of saving our babies. Looking at and I want to have this question to Ms. Hall regarding what's her perspective of the impact of institutionalized racism, not only on its impact of not having resources in our community, but even on the whole concept, as you mentioned in your book, you know, in terms of associating the quote, stain associated with your mom not believing you. And so what I just wanted to know your thoughts in terms of the impact of this whole thing that plagues us. You know, I started writing things about collisions, you know, the collision of racism. Even we run into ourselves regarding treatment. And of course, you know, you as a therapist realize the whole concept of denial and all these other defense mechanisms that come with trying to improve someone's life, particularly seeking out treatment. So, you know, I want to applaud you for everything you're doing. It is tremendously needed, particularly for our young girls. And I mentioned before that even though people think of the juvenile detention facility, they think of crimes committed like carjacking, things like that. But we have a vast unit of girls who are basically housed there for their own protection from sex trafficking. And, you know, the concepts that you bring up and that you have in your book, in your own testimony, you know, I'm ashamed to say that they are not being focused upon in terms of these young ladies downtown. So I'll hang up again. Congratulations on all your success and listen to your commentaries.
Thank you. So I, Dr. Long, I wanted to understand your question more when you said the racism. I wanted to.
Yeah, in terms of
your question.
That's it. So in what I was writing, reading some things in terms of another project I'm working on in terms of the lack of diversity and mental health. And, you know, started looking back at when desegregation occurred and, you know, people use different dates of 1956, from 1956 all the way to 1959, depending on whatever high school was had an African-American walk into it. But if you look at just that and think about all the trauma, you know, that we've suffered, let alone the massive trauma of racism, but the traumas within our own home and how much denial plays into that. So I just wanted to get your thoughts in terms of when you, you know, when you came in the house and your mom saw this stain, that she recognized this stain, but she doesn't believe you. But do you feel there's any correlation in terms of the impact of institutionalized racism on all of us, such that we don't even believe ourselves? You know, we can't believe it, just like a lot of us can't even bear the concept of racism still existing.
Yeah, that is really powerful and with a lot of depth. So going through my healing process, one of the things I had to come to grips with was forgiving my mom. And forgiving my mom for not believing me was very difficult to do when the Lord said, I got to let it go and forgive her. I was like, you know, she need to forgive. She need to ask me for forgiveness. My mind need to say something to me. And when I start walking through the healing process of forgiveness and recognizing that forgiveness was more for me, it was about untethering me from those things that were keeping me in bondage. And it took a while for me to really understand that. I began to come to grips with the fact that my mom, she grew up on, you know, picking cotton, that my mom suffered some of her own traumas. And I didn't really understand my mom's story either. And so as I began to forgive my mom, I began to understand that my mom had her own story. And that was big for me. And so my mom never really, sat down and really, you know, shared wholeheartedly her life. We would get bits and pieces of it. But I began to see my mom really as a mom who had her own story, that she became a good enough mom, that if she could have done better, she would have. And that my mom did love the Lord, and that I, you know, when she passed away, that our relationship had gotten better. What I have liked is seeing it even at a greater, a greater healing. But my mom was where she was, and I had to accept her where she was. But to know that what she had been exposed to, or like my mom once said, they were sitting around in the kitchen and she wasn't even paying attention to, you know, what my mom, what her mother, which was my grandmother, and her grandmother were talking about, and she ended up getting spit in the face. I mean, so things happen. And so when you talk about, I believe that as African Americans, we suffer multiple traumas. And unfortunately, we can even suffer trauma within our own homes. So there is a lot that has happened. And I think that we have been brainwashed to believe a lot of like what black is and what white is. And I try to be very aware of that now, of how black men can be viewed versus how we can view white men. Like, black women, and so that whole it's a lot there. That's what I'm saying. That really is a loaded question, but I can just say about the forgiveness that I had to walk through and begin to see, even as a counselor, just what our race has been through altogether. And I think, honestly, that we don't, as a whole, we don't really get so what we have gone through, because we are still living out some of those traumas, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'm curious,
outstanding conversation. I'm curious, the rest of the, if it's not putting you on the spot, the rest of the chapters in your book, the name of the rest of your chapters.
Oh, you said that you want to know the name of the chapters of the rest of my book?
Yeah, can you tell us, or just a few of the other the chapters that you have in your book?
Yeah, so I start, my first chapter is about foundation and the wonder years, because before the sexual abuse happened, I had a childhood. I had a childhood of us playing hopscotch and hide and go see and just being kids. And before my dad got hurt on the job, I talk about how he used to put my brother and I on his lap, and how he would just blow on our cheeks. And so there was a lot of love in my family. And so I appreciate you even asking that, because even though my parents did not believe me, I cannot take away from the fact that that they were still loving parents. That this was an area where it would have been phenomenal, and that it could have saved a lot of pain that they did not deal with, but they were great parents. And I think sometimes we can get into this all or nothing thinking. Like when I have counseled young girls who have been sexually abused by, say, their mother's boyfriend or something like that, they would say, but when he came into our life, he changed the trajectory. He changed our life, you know? Our life got better. So how could I think good about him and he did this evil thing? And a lot of times, even when you think about sexual abuse, they want to say that it make it violent. It's something that could have been violent. Well, it was a violent act. So let me say that. But he did not make me feel like he was committing violence against me. He talked very, very tenderly to me. He told me things that, you know, they tell girls about raising with dolls, being married. He told me he was going to marry me. He spoke the language of young girls when they playing with dolls. So it didn't appear like, so when somebody said, well, how come you didn't run? Well, that's a lot to put up on a child to tell her what to do. So I deal with the wonder years, and then I deal with the emerging presence of God, how as a little girl I used to go to church, and how I wanted to, how I love God. But having this happen to me, I really felt like God hated me. You know, like he must be angry. I had all these distortions about God, but I would never let God go. So I talk about that, and then the turmoil begins is a chapter, the stain on my dress, Daddy, am I? Because a lot of this hits your identity. Who are you? You know? I didn't know who I was. Am I gay? Am I straight? Who am I? You know, what's this thing that, you know, that's happened to me? I mean, you know, so it was very painful to walk through all of that. And then I talk about Daddy consoled me when I wanted my dad to console me. Forgiveness, my journey, the roots of abuse. And then I talk to men about getting involved, being a good source for women. And I also talk about the trial that happened with the coach, with the doctor from Michigan State, and how all these girls, right under the nose of parents and everybody else, he did these things. And I talk about that in my book. And yet some did go and tell, and they told them to hush. So I talk about that as well. So those are my chapters that I've given you every chapter in the book. But thank you so much for asking.
And thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. Cannon. We're going to turn to our listening audience. We definitely want to hear from you. Your area code is 865, and your last four digits are 0704. You have the floor.
Hi, Miss Mary. It's me, Ivy. I had something to say initially, but I mean, there are so many women out here, many in my own family, who are struggling have been struggling and are struggling, and I hope I have a dear, sweet sister, and I hope she is on here listening, and I hope that we're going to get a copy of your book, and this has just been really, really fabulous. Thank you so very much. Everybody on the panel, thank you.
Thank you as well, Ms. Ivy. Thank you for joining us tonight. We have
thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, we have an anonymous. You are live.
Hi, hi, Ms. Regina Hall. This is Francesca. This story was just, and of course, Mama Dr. Mary Lee. Hi, how are you today, and Mr. James Cannon? This story is very saddening to me. You know, I was just sitting here just absorbing so much of everything that you were saying, and I was just really just letting it absorb into my spirit. And, you know, I myself, you know, as a child was touched and just could not understand what was right or what was wrong. You know, I do think that it created a short-term part of my life where I was probably promiscuous as a teen and then later became a teen mother. But I don't think I understood. I think people do kind of want you to see it as a violent act or want you to feel a odd disconnect. I think because I was touched by older men and I was younger, it kind of caused me to always like older men. And that is just, you know, just hearing you, you know, really break down the different parts of your book and kind of feeling angry and why didn't, you know, your parent or your mom really see the signs that were there. I don't think that that mothers really know exactly what to necessarily look for. I know that I think that I recall my mom reminding me when I became older that I was kind of writing weird things down in school. And so the teacher had asked us to write like an imaginative story. And my story was really vulgar and it was so intense that it was brought to my mother's attention and she was asking me questions, but I think I was too fearful to really let her know what had transpired. And it wasn't until I became an adult and I started going to therapy and started really unlocking traumas that I was really able to articulate to her what happened. And even still, I think it's more of a state of shock and not really taking any type of ownership, you know. And I think that taking the ownership for mom sometimes would be taking some accountability, you know, because during that time period, I think that my mom needed to still maybe, like, my aggressor was one of my father's friends. And so I think taking me away from my dad, you know, was not something that she was ready to do, or not allowing me to go over to his house. Maybe that wasn't something that she was prepared to face, you know, or as you said, maybe some of her own traumas were, you know, brought into light when I was having the conversation. But I really don't think that it ever really will be addressed, you know. And I think that when we're looking for our parents to be more modern, you know, I feel like there's days where I'm like, well, why can't we really ever address the skeleton? So, you know, God has been my refuge, and I really do respect you so much for coming on and just being able to allow us to have those conversations about the girl child, because that girl child turns into a woman, and you face so many different emotions as a woman until you really resolve everything that took place in your childhood. So thank you again.
Sure. Sure. Thank you for sharing your story, because I think that's what's needed, right? That we all have a story, that everybody has a story, even those who have not gone through what we have gone through, but they have a story. And I think that's what's so important about understanding also International Day of the Girl Child, that it is to promote a girl's rights and to invite them to the table, is to eradicate poverty and to make the investment into girls mentally, financially, spiritually, physically, that those investments are happening. And the theme is, you know, empowered girls do become empowered women. And so it does matter. And we don't know, and you brought up a very good point, that most healing do not happen until adulthood. It doesn't necessarily click when you're going through life or you're growing up. You know, some things may be there, but it is mostly in adulthood that it clicks what really has happened to you. And so I do agree with you. Sometimes parents don't know what has happened. But bravo to the parents or to the communities that hear what the young girl is saying or see that there's been a change or sense that something is going on and having that conversation, or even before anything happened, like Dr. Marquise's mother did. I think those are so important. And it's so important, too, that we not sit and wanting to blame or point fingers, but to provide and to encourage healing and allow the person to heal in the space that they believe, in a way that they believe they need to heal. Because everybody don't believe that they have to go back and live through their story in order to be healed. And I totally agree with that. And that's why, you know, I know we're talking about sexual abuse, and it turned out being, you know, us talking about it, but the International Girl Child doesn't necessarily, is not just about that. And I just wanted to put that out.
Right. And so, so one doesn't necessarily have to talk about it or open up about it in order to heal. And I guess my feelings or contentions have always been, because, you know, I have participated in peer group sessions, I know, with mentors and mentees and coaches, you know, on this very topic. And, you know, it's a faith in a fear or letting it out. I don't know. It seems to me.
And so what I meant, Dr. Lee, what I meant by that, Dr. Lee, is that, like, they don't have to necessarily tell all the gory details of it.
Okay.
You know, yeah, that's what I was saying. So sorry about that, but that's what I was saying. Like, they don't have to tell all the,
tell all the details, but at least you get it out or share it with someone.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, Dr. Lee, you know, in this conversation, again, this is James Cannon, having 5 sons, and I have 3 sisters, no daughters, many grandchildren, and we've been working with youth across this nation. The most important thing is that young people have to understand that there's somebody that they can talk to. When you get isolated and start feeling like you have nobody to talk to, then I believe, and whether we can open up this conversation too, young people start turning to cutting themselves. They turn to excessive amounts of tattoos on their bodies. They turn to piercings that are against most parents' will. Most parents are going to say no, But when a child comes to my question would be, when a child comes to a point where they will make a permanent decision, like maybe even go get pregnant purposely or abort a child purposely, knowing that this is against my parents' will, but this is a permanent decision to put a tattoo on my face, on my body, to put piercings on, I guess my question would be, would that be an example of a child that's crying out? Because maybe, again, I have sons, I don't have daughters, where maybe a young lady is crying out because something's going on sexually or inappropriately, and as a result, she does something permanent like cutting or tattoos. I mean, because when we as parents trying to figure our kids out, we trying to understand. But so many new things are being thrown at all of us. They're getting counsel from 1,000 other places. And us as parents trying to understand, my question would be, do you consider these signs of a child that's crying out, cutting, tattoos, and excessive piercings, or is that just something normal of today?
You want me to answer that, Dr. Cannon?
Yes, ma'am.
So I'm going to yield some of this to Dr. Long as well, but what I can say is that yes and no. Yes and no. It just depends on the individual. Every trauma is not the same. And so it just depends on that individual. And so what I would say to that, there's so much social media out here as well. Their kids have access to so many things that there's a lot of identity crises that are out here. So it really just depends. So it depends on the person. It depends on how they're being impacted. It depends on how they're crying out. So what we used to say that drugs and alcohol was more of that. I have not thought of tattoos in that way, to be honest with you. It was taboo in my household. And now I see people walk around with them all over their body, like their billboards, and they seem to have a totally different attitude than when I was growing up. So I'll yield to Dr. Longs and Dr. McCree really about that.
What I would like to do, we are kind of winding down, but yes, would definitely like to hear from Dr. Longs and Dr. McCree on that. But then I would really like for us to kind of shift gears a little bit and really talk more about the event on September October the 11th, the event, because it is dealing with the empowerment of our young girls, girl child. It's dealing with the empowering, and there's so many ways to empower, a young lady, young girls, of the age group that's being addressed, during this event, and even, by us from day-to-day life. And so because we are faced, girls are faced with so many issues, not just sexual abuse, but,
right.
Hair and how we dress and other, poverty. And so all of these are, education, learning, some are dealing with disabilities, disabilities, physical disabilities, cerebral palsies. And so we're talking about the girl child period. And of course, as adults, we still have our child on the inside of us. We still have that girl. So the girl is there. And so I'd like to try. We really do try every Wednesday to solve the world problem. we help a lot. I do know that we help tremendously. This topic, you know, could really. I mean, it's powerful. I mean, it's, you know, some powerful things have been said. I know people have been touched here. I've received text messages during the conversation. And, you know, people are saddened. People are encouraged. You know, people are literally in tears right now. And, you know, and looking for answers. And so, you know, I'd love to see this October 11th event to be one of power, you know, to reach, you know, reaching into the trenches of this country, you know, amongst our girls, the girl child. And so, you know, if we can kind of, you know, deal with, you know, how, you know, what we can do for October 11th. And I mean, and how we can come together, and using, you know, all of our resources. I'm the one, I believe in us using everything we've got, you know. Don't think, oh, well, this fits over here in the funding league, or this fits over here at Neighborhood Commerce, or this fits over here, you know, in the daycares. No, it all fits together. You know, everything that we have, some type of way, we all fit together. And on October 11th, there's something that we all can do, you know, utilizing our gifts and talents, you know, and to make this huge, you know, to bring about and enlighten that on that particular day, people who haven't heard about it. So how do we, October 11th, all of us, in whatever capacity or whatever we're doing in life, how can we use all our resources to bring this day of empowering to our girl's child? And I know sexual abuse is huge. It's huge, and has been for a long time. And even yet today, mm-hmm. you know, loved ones today are enduring right now as we even talk about it, and they're not talking about it. And so, you know, with that said, Dr. Long, Dr. Moncrief, and we're going to make our circle back around to everyone. But I kind of, you know, we don't have a whole lot of time, but what can we do to impact, you know, our girls, you know, even before the 11th, the summer, you know, just getting started. We want our girls to be strong. Dr. Long.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with everything that's been said. And I also have to agree with Ms. Regina Hall's perspective in terms of what cutting and a lot of other things that children, adolescents tend to do. It just varies, you know. I hope I don't give the impression that at least the facility I work at downtown is housed with only black kids. You know, I'll see Caucasian kids. We even on a rare occasion see Asian kids down there adapting some of the cultural uniqueness of African-American kids. We'll see conflicts between parents from Iraq dealing with their daughters, particularly who are venturing out and seeking truth in terms of what they've been told. And it just happens to be in the greater part of Detroit where they're venturing out. And in most cases, you know, I'll say to these young girls, you know, that's an area that I don't even go into. So, but yeah, the cutting, that could be a means of seeking treatment or help. But, you know, like we've mentioned before, you know, from my perspective, and I'm hoping that Ms. Hall will concur, is that, you know, the things we do clinically, it all starts with listening. You know, it really starts with listening. And I've always said, you know, kids, adolescents will direct you on how to listen, but you have to be there non-biased, both ears open to listen to what they're saying. Now, they talk in code, and sometimes that can lead to a three-hour engaging therapy, but you just have to donate that time. In terms of how we save, you know, not only all of our kids, but particularly our girls, it begins with them, too. We have to listen to them and be observant.
Yeah. Absolutely, yes. Okay, I'm trying to... area code, we're going to go back to our audience again. Area code 307, and your last three digits are 307. You're live.
Hi, good evening. My name is Char. First of all, I just wanted to say thank you so much for the work you're doing, and Dr. Hall for your transparency and just your candid story, because if we don't have that, then our young women are not going to feel comfortable doing the same thing and talking about that. I think the work that you guys are doing is so important, and I just wanted to kind of put out there kind of a factor that my eyes were opened up to. I do legal work around the country, and I do pro bono work for young women who have been sexually abused or sex trafficked. And we help hold accountable some of the large social media platforms, to be unnamed at this point, but the bigger ones that you can imagine, and some hotel chains that let things happen blindly or turn the other way. But I think what my eyes were opened up to is I think there's kind of a general thought in America that sexual abuse or especially sex trafficking happens to the middle class, Caucasian 14-year-old walking down the street. She gets pulled into a van when actually that's very, very rare. And so I think, you know, we're talking a lot about parents on this call, and I greatly appreciate that. We need to educate our parents to be aware of grooming and be aware of signs, but as a larger society, it's our responsibility to help the women who are actually usually being abused or trafficked are women who are they don't have anybody looking out for them. You know, a lot of the women that I have worked with are foster kids. Their parents don't know where they are. They don't care where they are. Nobody's looking out for them. They've been in trouble. So, you know, if they're ever found, nobody really cares. And that's terrible to say, but it's so prevalent that I would say 80% of the clients that I have worked with, we are not able to resolve their cases because they have no support, they have no family, they don't have the education or the ability to follow through with the process or to stand up for themselves. So having said that, I just want to commend you all for what you're doing, because most of the time, a lot of these girls don't have parents involved who will notice or take concern. A lot of these girls, and again, I don't mean to just focus on sex trafficking, but even, you know, familial abuse, a lot of these girls are, you know, they are solicited by teenage boys, even in their high school. I live in a small town in Wyoming, and we've had teenage boys at the high school level being paid $200 just to get a girl to a party, you know, so a girl will feel excited because a high school boy is interested in them. And they get taken to a party, and then from there they are abused by an older man. So I guess my only point, and also a point of gratitude to you all, is that we're raising awareness as a society that we need to stand up for these girls. So thank you.
And thank you for joining us, Char, and appreciate your comments. You said that you do a lot of pro bono across the country, and that 80% of you're working. So most of the support that you're providing is 80% of our foster care children, our foster kids, you know, who really don't have anyone in their lives who care as far as family or for whatever reason they're in the foster care. So I just wanted to kind of piggyback on that and say that we are Neighborhood Commerce Institute, along with Israel Promised Land, you know, we are focusing, you know, this year and probably for a few years to come on foster care, on the foster care system, particularly, you know, well, all foster care children, but there is a huge disparity when it comes to the African American and others. Do you find that in your work for the support or the larger numbers, you know, of you know, non-supportive children?
Yes, unfortunately, and I think it just correlates with our national statistics, you know, about socioeconomic status. And, you know, I want to clarify, it's not, you know, not just foster kids, but runaway kids or kids who have been in trouble, kids that just don't have the support, you know, that is needed to stand up or to have anybody care about what they're doing. But, yes, I would agree with you, absolutely.
Thank you. And so, you know, I just want to kind of, like, interject right here to our listeners that we are seeking, you know, out of foster care organizations, agencies, or homes, or, you know, people who are in the foster care and, you know, adoption communities, those children, and those programs and those, you know, those projects. So we're especially reaching out. We're asking you to contact us. We're asking you to become a part of what we're doing and allow Neighborhood Commerce and Israel Promised Land to bring our together in order to help. And when I say help, we're talking financially. We're talking about the community development corporations and bringing funding and relief in every way we can to our foster care communities. And so, again, thank you for joining us. So, Dr. Long's work, did you complete? Oh, okay, I'm sorry, Shar, go ahead.
No, I just said thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Dr. Moncrief. Well, before we go to Dr. Moncrief, Jared has a question. So we won't touch base with Jared. We definitely want to come back to Trey. And we are in our last, we are kind of wrapping it up for tonight. So please keep that in mind. So, Jared, you had a question?
Yes, ma'am. Ms. Hall, I wanted to ask you, in the work that you're doing, something that we don't really focus on too much, but it's a phenomenon that's happening, is how women's issues have basically been so politicized in the country. It's as is politics, they prey on the emotion of a lot of topics and issues to, you know, galvanize people. And in a lot of ways, some of these things, I think, have kind of listed over into having an enmity to them, right? And as a male from the outside, you know, and especially having incurred some of these things where I wondered if some of the women who were in my life may have had issues that they just didn't discuss with me, and then some of those things were reactive and, you know, almost weaponized in a lot of ways with that enmity that was there. How do you combat these things turning into that you know, sort of vitriolic and spiteful talk that you hear in the political circles, where it kind of overshadows and washes over the personal connection so that someone can have empathy without the enmity?
Yeah, that's a really good question because, I mean, it's out there, just like you said, right? It's out there. We even had a president in office where, I mean, he was able to become president, and all that information was out there. I was, so what I can say is out there, And I think the awareness of talking about it, the way we are talking about it now, even though I totally agree with Dr. Lee, you know, the International Day of the Girl Child is not all about this, but I do want to say that I am very happy that there has been some conversation around it, because, you know, first of all, it's not an easy topic to talk about. There's a lot of shame. There's a lot of guilt. There's a lot of unforgiveness that can go along with dealing with sexual abuse. There's definitely blame. So you walk around with so much. And so when you say it's politicized, I believe what I would say to all of that is that the more we are able to talk about it and people become aware of it, that really having a sensitivity to it, not telling the person to get over it, or, you know, I mean, women have even said that, get over it, you know, I mean, that happened to me too. It's not a big deal. But it is a big deal. You know, it really is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And so
it is
having
that
empathy, yeah, having that empathy can start with men as well, not playing it down, not saying women are, you know, gold diggers. And it's really the perspective and the attitude, you know. A president even saying, you know, she's ugly, why would I? It has nothing to do with that, because it's all about power. So really having an understanding, being educated about it, and not being a part of. So this is the one step that everybody can do, not becoming a part of the problem, but being a part of the solution. I believe that's the best way I can answer that.
Dr. Lee, real quickly, if I could respond, you know, such great conversation. You know, when we think about the fact that we all trying to live, everybody's made mistakes, everybody's had great successes. Our children now, they get a chance to make mistakes and have their great successes. Then so do our grandchildren. And the rules for a lot of things are changing right before our eyes. The rules of dating, the rules of courting, chivalry. I think, Dr. Lee, particularly coming on the end of, you know, the last few shows that we have, if somehow we can get involved in writing the new rules, even for our young people, you know, people that's been through some abuses, some hurts, some pains, a part of their therapy could be to help write the new rules for this younger generation so that they don't make mistakes. Some of us and our young people have just made stupid knucklehead decisions as young people that they would never make as adults. But some of those decisions as young people, if you make the wrong decisions, they're permanent. You got to keep that tattoo on your face. You may have to go to jail. You may have to be labeled as a offender. So I'm saying, if somehow, even for these corporations, they got to write the new rules. The schools have to write with the internet what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. Dr. Lee, I guess I'm just requesting, is it any way that we could think about putting together a 1-2-3 manual with the best mind that we can get for our young people? And not only for them, but for us going back into corporate America. How do we not offend each other? And so that's what I wanted to say about that. Because having sons, you know, I don't want my sons making bad decisions. And now as a man, you know, they're being labeled because of other people's decisions. And, you know, they may understand you cannot take it. If you take it, I had a young kid at 14 say, if my girlfriend don't give it to me tonight, I'm going to take it. And all of his friends were saying, yeah. And they didn't know he might was serious. I pulled the van over. I looked that young man in the eye, and I said, young man, if you take it, they got a jail cell for you because that's rape. And at 14, I could tell that young man had never had nobody look him in the eye seriously and say that. So I think we need to bring these young men to the table in the conversation. We need to do these radio shows, produce these shows, as many as possible. And I think that's a part of the answer. And then get the good mentorship like we talked about, you know, so that they can talk to people one-on-one when they need it. There mm-hmm. is somebody out there that you can talk to. It mm-hmm. may be a parent.
Yeah, and this is a – yes, yes. And this part is extremely important. Yes, this topic is a big deal. There's no question and but about it. This is a worldwide, but particularly,
yes, ma'am.
You know, amongst, you know, us as a people. Now, I don't have any take, no issues in us discussing it. But what I want us to do is, as we talk about this, because, you know, right now I'm getting text messages and chatting, and people's emotions are peaked, and people are sad, people are hurting. I want us to be able to, when we have these conversations, we need to be able to direct people where to go. We need to have a list of resources on hand so that we can give it to them. And I don't mean just a national, ordinary, you know, sex abuse number. I mean us as a people. Where can they go? Where can we send them to? Amongst their own people for help, real help, not to another predator. You know, because people, it's a big deal. This is a big deal. There are things people have not talked about or shared with anyone. And then, you know, emotions and memories, you know, are all brought back alive again. And so, you know, I like for Dr. Long, you know, I don't know what type of resources we have, but tonight we need to leave some. We need to share something tonight so that our listening audience, you know, and others can have, you know, somewhere to go. So when we have these talks, we're not leaving people, you know, in the cold, with nowhere to go except back into their shells, you know, back within themselves again to do whatever they might do, because we're stirring up a big deal tonight.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, we want to talk about, you know, we want to empower, we want to provide hope. You know, we don't just want to steer it up and leave it. And so I want to, Ms. Regina, thank you. I don't know if I do want Dr. Moncrief and Dr. Long to provide something tonight. I know there's telemedicine psychiatry. See, I don't even know what it's called because it's not really my field. But let's leave some resources tonight, okay? You may have something. I know you're in the media, and
I have resources.
Time. Okay, please provide your resources, please. Mm-hmm. Let's start with you, and then. And then we move on. So go ahead, yep. Ms. Regina.
Yeah, so I am a counselor, and I do telehealth. I can be reached through my website, reginachall.com. And I also provide groups and trainings and different things of that nature. And so, yeah, they can definitely call me. There are books that I can recommend that they can read, and there are other counselors, too, as well. So they can feel free to get in touch with me through reginachall.com. That's my website, and they can contact me that way.
Thank you. Dr. Law.
Hi, yeah, there's a lot of resources. Now, in terms of the numbers of African Americans practicing in the different arenas of behavioral health, mental health, as we would imagine, our numbers are low, but there are a fair number of us that are still around practicing in private practice and even using telehealth. Our office in Southfield, it's entitled Behavioral Health Associates. It's in Southfield, Michigan. And we have a phone number, 248-809-6732. We also have an adjoining nonprofit entitled LLSM Behavioral Initiative. So we provide services there, and I'm not the only doctor there. I have Dr. David Harris, other therapists in terms of Renee Massey has been on our show. We have I'm blocking right now, Mr. Calhoun, who's also a part of our entity, and Ms. Janine Tyree. So we have individuals there who can provide some services. In addition to just our office, there's CNS Healthcare, which is throughout the various counties in Detroit, including Wayne, Macomb, and Oakland, where Dr. Michelle Reed, who's an African-American physician, who's been around a long time with providing services. Dr. Michelle Leno, who has her own private practice and a radio show, Dr. Michelle. So she's also a resource. So although the numbers aren't as great as we would like, we are there. A lot of us still work with community mental health agencies, such as Northeast Guidance Center, and some of our other African Americans work in the actual hospital setting. So, and of course, the Wayne County Mental Health Authority is also around. So those are just some resources. There are a lot more. A lot of private practitioners still practicing. Dr. Xavier White is another person whose name just comes to me. So, yeah, there are resources, but if you our website at Behavioral Health at LLSM is behavioralarts.com, which is sort of a unique name, but when we launched that nonprofit, our goal was to provide mental health services for creative people, including musicians, et cetera. But we also provide services for law enforcement. And we do a lot of work with attorneys in terms of dealing with abuse, neglect, going after police officers, et cetera. So we are still around, even though we don't do a lot of advertising.
Okay. Well, thank you so very much. And any of these numbers or websites that you don't get, you certainly can call or text 571-251-5193, and we will connect you. We will connect you. Thank you. Doc, thank you so much. Dr. Moncrief, we are wrapping it up at this time. Thank you. Oh, Dr. Long, did you do your wrap-up?
Oh, I want to, again, give a shout-out to Ms. Regina Hall and your efforts, all the work you put into not only your book, but also the work that you put in nurturing our community with your therapeutic talents, et cetera. I want to get a little bit more information on that date in October. I hope and I plan to be able to support you in your venture. And we'd love to have you come down and talk to some of our young ladies who are downtown in the Wayne County Juvenile Detention Facility in the various capacities, whether it's neglect abuse docket or other areas. But again, God bless you. Much more success.
Thank you, Dr. Long.
Dr. Moncrief.
Yes. Very, very insightful show tonight. I appreciate us just touching upon the topic of sexual abuse in our children. It just makes you reflect back on our topic. Something inside of us is broken, and I don't know how to fix it. Mm-hmm. We can look at the impact on our girls and our young boys. I don't want to forget about them also. Some of them do act out after they've been assaulted and they are being abused. Some of them do have acting out behaviors. Some of them do cut. Some of them get piercings. Some of them get tattoos. But others do just the opposite. You know, they internalize their situation. They become quiet. They become isolated. So we should be looking for changes in behaviors of our children. If you know what your child normally acts like and that behavior changes, then you need to find out what's going on. Okay? So it doesn't have to be something as obvious as cutting. It could just be somebody who went outside to play every single day and now you can't get them out their room. So you need to know your friend, your neighbor, and you need to be able to reach out to them and ask the question, what's going on? What's wrong? And this whole issue of sexual abuse and the way it's just overwhelming to me. It's like black people, for example, we're so used to living under conditions of stress and oppression even today that we don't even know that until we remove from that situation. It's almost like we're getting too used to having our children being sexually and physically abused. We have to make this a priority to address. So I want to just thank Ms. Hall for inspiring us to get to this topic tonight, as opposed to what I thought we were going to be talking about. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Moncrief. And we cannot overly emphasize the necessity. It's an absolute necessity to watch your children when there is a change. I mean, you know, if you notice any type of change in your child's customary behavior, those are red flags. I mean, something is going on. I won't say that it's sexual or what it could be or is, but just know. Don't even think a second time about it. Something is going on. Anytime you notice a change in your child's customary, you know, actions and behavior, and it can be so subtle sometimes. It doesn't even have to be something that's huge. You know, maybe they're not as talkative as they always are, or quiet, or like you say, going to their rooms, or maybe they used to go out and play, but now they're not going out playing. They don't want to go out and play as much as they used to, or they don't like school anymore, or they start saying things like, I don't want to go to cheerleading practice. So we must pay attention as adults to these changes and start trying to find out why. There is always a why. Always. Always. And so we cannot assume what that why is. I mean, just we got the Michigan State, that coach, you know, a renowned individual. Look what he was doing for so long and so many girls. And you know, I even had a niece school that a trainee who was going there because he taught all ages. And so we have to, you know, when have our children in these various different activities, extracurricular activities, we have to pay attention to changes. And this girl, you know, she loved, I mean, she just loved that, you know, that you know, the dancing, the gymnastics. I mean, she was born with that talent. But look at what happened at that renowned, you know, trainer. And so we just can't not take things and our children, you know, for granted or feel, not that we're taking them for granted, but it's like we feel that we know, but we don't know. We don't know.
Definitely.
And so I can't tell you how much I do appreciate you, Miss Regina. So we're moving on with our summary for tonight. We'll ask Jared and Trace, and then we're going to come back to Dr. Cannon and our Regina. I hope I haven't missed anyone. Okay.
Yes,
thank
ma'am,
Dr. Lee.
I just want to say in my closing tonight, again, I'm humbled always for everything that we cover in the show. Ms. Hall, it has been a pleasure, and thank you. Thank you so much for your bravery. Also, Ms. Sparkle, as usual, again, thank you so much for your bravery as well. And a special shout-out to Char. Thank you so much for chiming in and offering us what you offered. It was greatly appreciated. Thank you so much. I hope you come back. To everyone else, again, thank you so much. That's all I really have is just graciousness and thank yous. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Trace.
Yeah, Trace here. It's pretty much everything in a nutshell. I want to thank everybody for having me. Thank you for those who tuned in, those who enlightened and educated us, and gave – somebody got healed tonight just from listening, just from speaking and participating. And so God bless you all, and I appreciate it. Till next time.
Appreciate you. And I just have to continue to share with everyone, you know, that you're a young man, 21, 22 – somewhere there, who has been caring for his younger siblings. And so Trace is operating and functioning in the capacity of a parent, and not being a parent, but has to deal with everything that we're talking about, because Trace has sisters and, you know, siblings that he's caring for, you know, helping them to get through college, you know, through high school. And so I really, really, really admire you for what you're doing and how, you know, your conviction in God and how you rely on God to help you and, you know, to know what to do and how to do. Would you just tell our audience how many children you're taking care of? How many of your siblings?
Yeah, I have four siblings and a nephew. I've definitely it takes a village. So I have an active father. My siblings are as active as possible. It's just that we had to step up and fill a massive void/role, which was the passing of my mother a few years. And so since then, of course, adjustments have to be made. So from going full-time with my mother, especially this happened in the middle of my collegiate years, and my youngest sister was 12 at the time. And so without going too much into in-depth, it was just a major transition. And so me helping out is really just doing whatever, stepping up and doing whatever I can when needed, and also being a resource to my siblings, all of them being a resource, being a model to them, and being really a source of life in any way possible, given that my father's a full-time provider. So definitely an adjustment. Grieving is involved. It's a real life experience. And I really just do my best to make life easier for those coming behind me and for those that are ahead of me or came before me, is to like I said, to be that life source of knowledge, wisdom, love, prayer, whatever is necessary, and guidance. So I appreciate it, Dr. Lee, for the notoriety, and I appreciate you for having me. It's always a pleasure and a blessing to be here, be present, and be active. And I appreciate this platform, and I appreciate this opportunity, and I appreciate and love you and everyone who participates, through all the doctors. I appreciate everybody. My heart's filled tonight on forward.
Thank you so much, and I certainly love you so very much. And I'm just going to make this announcement that Trace is about to be my nephew. He's just proposed just a little bit ago to my niece, and so I'm gaining a wonderful nephew, and I love you so much. Thank you.
Absolutely. I love you, too. I appreciate you. Thank you.
So we're at Dr. Cannon, I believe, right?
Yes, y'all. Listen, this has been an outstanding conversation. As usual, I just want to say how much I appreciate you, Dr. Lee. I appreciate everybody that chimed in. Keep coming on Wednesday. Let's do some more shows. This is what's therapeutic. We get our families together. If they're all women shows, all young men shows. But in raising 5 sons, one of the secrets is you got to keep talking. You got to talk to your kids, to your young people. You got to keep that communication going. So let's do some more shows. We can produce your shows, work with your shows through Dr. Mary Lee. And so that's what we want to offer. Also, as a beautiful plug, there is a book that I've written on Amazon, Help My Son Has Lost His Mind by James Cannon. Is dealing with peer pressure. What does a parent do? That peer pressure gets so strong at 14, 15. Chapter 1, you got to keep that love. You got to keep talking to them. You got to keep that language of love. Chapter 2, you got to pray with them. Not long prayers, simple prayers. Not pray for them, pray with them. Stop them before they leave. Pray a 30-second, 15-second prayer. God, protect my child. Let my child know I love them. We got to use that language of love, and we got to pray. Bring them up under God. No long prayers. Don't make it difficult. But we got to do that because they got so many different voices. And if they stop trusting mama and they stop trusting daddy, it's a cold world out there. And our kids will start making decisions. They will go to witch. They will go to voodoo. They will go to charms and all different other voices. So the most important voice was Moses' mama. That's what I say in the book, Help My Son Has Lost His Mind by James Cannon from Amazon. Moses' mama said, not my child. I do not care what's going on in the world. I don't care what the demand of the government is. My child's going to stay alive. She made a decision, y'all. And when we make a decision, we have shows like this week after week after week. Get your young people on the show with us, and we'll be changed together. Dr. Lee, to the staff, for everybody, been an outstanding show again. I appreciate y'all.
I appreciate you so much. Well, I do know, it's been brought to my attention that we do have a caller, someone who has a question or comment, and we don't want to leave anyone out. So, error code 443-0775, you have the mic. Comment. Error code is 443. Your last 4 digits.
Yes, I appreciate this opportunity. I don't have anything grand and grandiose to add to resources, but I would like to say, and I'm thinking in relation to the October event, that as a retired library media specialist, to really put a lot of attention on media literacy in the inner city, and that I feel that the organization Common Sense Media may have some resources. They sell kits that are available that PTAs, organizations, and even schools can purchase that teach children media literacy. Why media literacy? They have a very serious way of looking at movies, books, everything that touches children, that helps parents, whether you're a young parent and a young parent, an older sibling, to help children find materials that do not have so many dangerous stereotypes. And I was in the primary school and noticed a lot of sexual innuendos in relation to what kids were doing online with people. So the online presence, again, Common Sense Media, mm-hmm. and maybe they should be considered in some kind of way as someone any black group could support to have some workshops with communities that just parents, older siblings can sit down and talk to kids about how do you decide what you're looking at, if it's good for you or not, what game you're playing, what video game you're playing. I consistently had a lot of trouble convincing parents is that the video games their children were playing had too much violence, they had too much cursing, they had, just based on the scale of this organization. And I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, thank you so very much. We appreciate you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And we appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you so much. So, Regina, you're wrapping it up tonight. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Yeah, I just want to thank you, Dr. Lee and Dr. Cannon and Dr. Long, Dr. Marcrease and Trace. Congratulations on your, I think she said newly graduate from college, and congratulations. And everybody else on the panel, I'm sorry, I don't recall everybody's name, but it's just an awesome opportunity. And as my pastor used to say, Dr. Sampson, he would say, this was delicious. And I'm grateful that I was able to share my story. And I agree, Dr. Marcrease, I didn't know that that this was going to be the discussion. But Dr. Lee did warn me that the discussions can take a life of their own. So I do want to say and talk briefly about the day of October the 11th, and it is the International Day of the Girl Child, and this is the United Nations General Assembly that started this on December 19th of 2011, and it really is to focus attention on the need to address the challenges girls face and to promote girls' empowerment and the fulfillment of their human rights. And in fulfillment of their human rights, like I said earlier, it can be different in various countries, in various girls' lives, but we do know all the things that Dr. Lee had stated earlier. It has to do with disabilities. It does have to do with abuse. It has to do with negligence and with poverty. And so it's just a whole slew of ways that we can be supportive of our girls, particularly on this day. And you can do that by contacting me. You can contact me right now through reginachall.com, but I am establishing a separate website for this event and for my organization. I've been in the process of doing another website, but reginachall.com, if you're interested in participating. And thank you, Dr. Lee, for this platform to be able to talk about it, because we do need to bring more recognition to empowering our girls and knowing that we are going to grow up as empowered women. And you did say that there are still women with the child within them. And yes, there are so many women that still have that child that's locked in, that's waiting to be empowered. And so I salute you and I encourage you in finding your voice and finding those tutors and this show and even connecting with the people on this panel who can be of support. And so thank you, thank you, thank you, and a special thank you to Francesca Sparkle for introducing me and allowing this invitation to go forth.
Well, we appreciate you, and you certainly are welcome. You're welcome to come back again. And I want to thank everyone tonight for your participation, for listening, for your comments. It's just been a pleasure. I love you all. God bless you. Till next week, this is Dr. Mary Lee. Stay safe.
God bless you.
Peace to
the ancestors.
Thank you.
God bless you.
Yes.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Night. Absolutely.
Night.
Good night.
Peace to the movement. We came from the bottom. Ever since they got us, we've been going through these problems. 400 years behind, and it's no promise that we gon' never actually be equal, to be honest. It's messed up how they put us in chains, kidnapped our language and changed our names. But when we speak Ebonics, then they call it a shame. They leave us with a couple options, rob or slain. Now we locked up again. How much can our skin take? We went from slaves to inmates, carrying the weight of the 50 states, working your farms. Black nannies carrying your white babies in their arms. Black men sacrifice their lives in your wars, but you'll never show appreciation here at home. You treat us so damn wrong. You act like you hate my race. The police, they just beat us in the streets like an 808 base. America, when will you defend my case? It never will, cause your freedom is fake. I'm only living here cause I'm willing to get paid enough to round up all my family and shake.
Get up, get up, get up, get up, get up, get up.
Case scenario, might work, still a couple of quirks. Can't call it pancakes cause you pour some syrup. It's a whole lot bigger than a pretty new house, especially when the road is still running about. P. Diddy running marathons, races go. That's going to the school where the tax money go. Homeland security, now there's a phenomenon. Pacifying folks by hanging Saddam. Troops still riding, still obliging, still no Bin Laden. Tuned in waiting for the president's announcements. No 40 acres, take these 40 ounces. We ain't gonna get on the levees. Revolution televised early.
America,
is you ready?
Why you wanna treat me so cold, America?
Lost your mind, especially when you done been down for so much time. Getting up don't even really ever cross your mind. You got pawn shop, gun shop, liquor store sign, SWAT team, crack fiend, unemployed line. Stay late, dollar short, trying to buy time. What we do to survive is defined as a life of crime. You can't ball, then you forced to grind. If you fall, then you cross the line. And I've been putting in work from 9 to 5 and 5 to 9. Since phone calls cost a dime, what it made me is one of the relevant, highly intelligent brothers not only dealing with the same drugs. If I'm a hustler, then what's more American? We all founded on the same thug heritage.
Why you want?